All of the major news stories made simple and easy for your listening pleasure. We'll break it down for you in keywords for the segment. We're joined by Adam in the studio. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning, Lena.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. Yourself?
I'm doing not too shabby, yeah.
Yeah, not too shabby. Yeah.
How frequently do you shampoo your hair?
Oh, every day.
You know, I do hear that, you know, men with short hair have it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I mean, it's less time to dry it, less shampoo costs, things like that. So every day.
It's very convenient for me.
What if you know, people told you that there was a movement to shampoo less because that's better for your scalp and better for your hair?
I would
say
be
no.
Bewildered.
I think that's a natural reaction, yeah. Which is why we're going to have a full-on conversation on Question Unboxing. There are two sides to that story. I mean, some people are fully-fledged believers of shampooing less.
Really?
Better for the environment, better for your scalp.
Yeah.
And then there are the rest of us who live in a crowded city thinking, ooh, wouldn't I stink up the subway car? Something like that.
Yeah, I can't go a day without not washing my hair.
With shampoo.
Or showering. It's just ew and yucky and, yeah, I can't live with myself.
Well, there you have it. Apparently, though, it takes a little bit of adjustment period.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that more in Question Unboxing. I just wanted to extract an answer out of Adam. I'm not going to give mine.
I'll be listening in. I'm intrigued now.
All right, guys. It's time for keyword news. This is where we clarify some of the major headlines for you. Let's start out with our first pick of the day.
Medium risk level.
So COVID infections have been seeing a downturn recently, and the government has accordingly put the risk level of the pandemic over the past week at the medium level. Of course, we have to look at what that really indicates. Mm-hmm. And is that for, of course, including the metropolitan area?
Yeah, well, there's not much of a change. It's been like this for 2 weeks now. The medium level is both for the metropolitan and non-metropolitan areas. The level for regions outside the capital area has actually been raised by one notch. The government noted that infections in non-capital regions have actually grown slightly recently. The nationwide level was brought down to medium in the first week of this month. That was from a very high, and that very high level actually went on for 7 straight weeks before that.
Mm-hmm.
So towards the end of last year, it's been at very high level, as we saw with the daily numbers increasing and that surge. Now, the government is concerned about the spread of Omicron still, though. The detection rate of the new variant stands at just under 27%. The variant is also being found in more non-capital areas as well, hence why the risk level for that non-capital area has been raised by that one notch. But there is a silver lining in that critical patient numbers are down, almost by half, in fact. And this is opening up, of course, more hospital beds, which we were in short supply of, and it's causing, of course, subsequently less strain on the medical system.
Which brings us to our second keyword of the day.
Paxlovid efficacy.
Because what these oral treatments are designed to do for those that are being offered, the vulnerable group, for example, in South Korea, it's to alleviate that strain on the medical system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now a recent study in Israel has shown some promising signs regarding Pfizer's antiviral drug. That's Paxlovid. Run us through the details.
Yeah, so Israeli media is citing data released by Maccabi Healthcare Services. It showed that 92% of patients treated with Paxlovid showed improvement within 3 days of taking the drug. Some 60% said they felt relief within 1 day as well. No patients who took Paxlovid were hospitalized during or after treatment. So far, Maccabi said that it has treated 850 people with the antiviral medication meant to be administered within 3 to 5 days of symptom onset. 25% of those offered Paxlovid said they did not want to take it, so they were kind of left out of the equation. Some 88% of those who did reported taking the drug according to the instructions. Only 6% said they stopped before the end of the 5-day treatment course, mostly due to side effects. Another 6% said that they never started taking the drug because of fear of side effects, or that it would interact poorly with other drugs that they were taking. Of course, that was the recommendation. If you are taking other drugs, consult your doctor to see if you can take it alongside the drugs that you're already taking.
Right.
Now, the most common side effect experienced by those who took Paxlovid was a kind of bitter metallic taste in their mouth.
Yeah.
Others experienced diarrhea as well as loss of taste or smell and muscle aches and headaches. The patient said that the drug led to a decrease, though, in fever, headaches and coughs that they were experiencing from the virus. So it does seem to be working somewhat.
Right. I mean, because compared to those more serious, I guess, symptoms after taking these oral pills, these side effects may be less severe and kind of expected.
And reports from Korea are also showing that there's been a couple dozen people who have already taken the Paxlovid drug, and there's some signs of improvement as well among those people.
All right. What's not so promising is the administration of a fourth vaccine shot. Remember, there's sort of a tug of war between will it or will it not be effective, especially when fighting the Omicron variant. So what does the latest study indicate?
Yeah, so a fourth shot boosts antibodies to even higher levels than the third jab, but it is not enough to prevent Omicron infection. That's according to a preliminary study by Israel's Sheba Medical Center. It has given the second booster shots in a trial among its staff. It is studying the effect of the Pfizer booster in 154 people after 2 weeks and the Moderna booster in 120 people after 1 week. These were compared to a control group that did not receive the fourth shot. Now, those in the Moderna group had previously received three shots of Pfizer's vaccine. Now, the findings, which the hospital said were the first of its kind in the world, were preliminary and not yet published. So they did stress that. The researchers did recommend, though, a fourth shot to those at higher risk of infection, such as the elderly. As you mentioned, there is this argument of, is the fourth shot effective? Is it too many vaccines to fight one virus? And there's been a lot of mixed reactions among experts as well over it.
Like questions like, is there enough research out there for us to administer the second booster, as you've said, in such a short time frame? But as we've said on the show, there are countries that have already allowed it for the vulnerable groups, including Israel. We'll have to wait and see what other studies indicate, right?
Yeah.
All right, moving on to our third keyword of the day.
Olympic tickets.
Whether you're ready for it or not, we're down to last wire. Another Olympic Games ready to be open to the public? Not quite. Organizers of the Beijing Winter Olympics say tickets to the event will not be sold to the general public, but distributed to what they are calling targeted groups. So many questions. What does that mean?
The chosen ones.
Right. I mean, it sounds so ominous.
But organizers said the games would be kept in what they're calling a closed loop, meaning that only a limited number of spectators would be allowed in venues. Overseas spectators, of course, will not be allowed to enter to the country, and personnel involved in the games will have to avoid contact with people outside of this closed loop.
So it's like an Olympic bubble, if you will.
Right, exactly. This inner circle, if you will. Yeah. Now, the closed loop system will encompass venues as well as official hotels and the event's own transport service. Now, fully vaccinated participants will be able to enter the closed loop without quarantining. Those who aren't vaccinated will need to be quarantined for 21 days upon arrival in Beijing, unless they have medical exemptions. Now, the selected group will be invited on-site throughout the games. They'll be required to strictly comply with COVID-19 prevention and control requirements before, during, and after watching the games. And they'll be closely watched as well. The IOC said that those in attendance will be residents of China's mainland who have the required COVID-19 countermeasures, such as vaccines and negative tests and whatnot. And participants will be subject to daily health monitoring and testing and will have no contact with the general public.
So there is a pretty, I think, giant gray cloud over the Beijing Games for a number of different reasons, but that's, I suppose, how to host the games during the pandemic.
Exactly.
And on to our fourth keyword of the day.
missile launch reactions.
So North Korea's recent missile launches have sparked international backlash again. I mean, it being a fourth test just within this year, I think that's a warning sign as well. What's been some of the reactions?
Well, let's start off with the UN. The spokesman, Stefan Dujarric, said the UN is very concerned by the latest North Korean missile launch. He also stressed the importance of all related parties to re-engage in diplomatic talks, and he added that the UN is already set up to help in such efforts. The United States also condemned North Korea's launch, but it reaffirmed its commitment to resolve the issue diplomatically. The State Department urged the North to engage in dialogue once more. A department spokesperson also said Washington's commitment to the defense of South Korea remains ironclad. These are basically all the same comments that come out when such provocations occur.
Sure.
Meanwhile, the nuclear envoys of South Korea, the US and Japan held phone talks to discuss the latest provocation. Washington's Sung Kim expressed similar sentiment as the State Department, saying basically the same thing. And he also called on the regime to cease what he called its unlawful and destabilizing activities and instead engage in dialogue.
South Korea's sentiment seems to be awfully similar, right? Come back to dialogue and seek peace as opposed to these testings.
Yes.
All right. It does seem like repeatedly the same sort of scenario, but that's the nature of, I guess, North Korea, right?
Yeah, but on North Korea's part, it did say that it wasn't targeting or had any specific country in mind. It was just solely to improve its defensive capabilities
weaponry. But just the idea of promising to bolster its military capabilities could be considered a threat from other countries.
Exactly. That has always been the problem. Yeah. It's always the same repertoire over and over again. North Korea says it's owned for our self-defense. Other countries say, well, it's in violation of UN sanctions. And, you know, same circle.
All right, we'll have to wait and see how this story pans out. Meanwhile, on to our fifth keyword of the day.
Tokto tensions.
Speaking of redundancy, this feels remarkably similar too. Tensions between Korea and Japan over the Tokto Islets have reignited once more. The narrative seems to be the same. South Korea, we say that the Tokto Islets belong to us. Japan says otherwise. What's the latest?
Again, similar comments that come out over and over again, time and time again when this issue is raised. And once more, it has been reached the surface again. Seoul has strongly protested against the Japanese Foreign Minister Yoshimasa Hayashi's remarks that renewed territorial claims over Tokto. Hayashi reiterated Tokyo's stance over the islets in his speech outlining the government's foreign policy vision. That happened at the opening of a parliamentary session. Korea's foreign ministry said the Japanese government should stop its it's calling futile claims to Tokto, which again is clearly Korea's inherent territory historically, geographically, and by international law. It added that Tokyo will have to clearly recognize that the right historical perception serves as the basis for the development of future-oriented Korea-Japan relations. That future-oriented, orientated word always comes up in these issues. And the ministry also demanded Hayashi immediately retract his remarks. Whether that will happen, pretty unlikely though.
All right, on to our last keyword of the day.
Raising interest rates.
Commercial banks are raising interest rates on deposits following the central bank's rate hike just last week. So what's the latest?
Yeah, so this was widely expected.
Sure.
It happens every time an interest rate hike happens. But let's look at the individual banks. Shinhan Bank raised interest rates by as much as 0.4 percentage points on 36 financial products that started yesterday. Mm-hmm. The highest rate offered by Shinhan Bank for a savings plan is now 4.4%. Uri Bank is raising rates by 0.1 to 0.3 percentage points on 38 financial products. Hana Bank, another big bank, is raising rates by up to 0.3 percentage points on 22 products. Other commercial banks, including KB, Kungmin, and Nongyap, have also decided to raise rates, but haven't announced the exact details yet. Rate increases are also coming to mortgages. All the major banks are offering fixed mortgage rates between 3.75% and just over 5.5%. That's as of last Friday. So savings accounts interest rates have gone up, but of course the cost of borrowing has also gone up as well. So it's kind of a bit of a conflict there. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. I'll see you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.